case this morning. Morales Salazar versus Eric Holder.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Kern on behalf of Mauricio Morales Salazar. Your Honors, we're before this court with just one issue that requires your adjudication. We're asking you to rule that the immigration judge and subsequently the Board of Immigration Appeals have abused their discretion by denying continuance in removal proceedings, where continuance was requested in order to pursue post-conviction relief based on ineffective assistance of counsel, where such relief, if granted, had potential of materially affecting the final outcome of the removal case, and where the petitioner has, in fact, actively pursued his post-conviction efforts. In its brief, the government argued that this court has no jurisdiction to rule on our petition. They cite 8 U.S.C. Section 1252. Since Mr. Salazar was ordered removed as a result of numerous criminal convictions, the court would be stripped of jurisdiction.
Mr. Kern, the post-conviction relief effort in state court, your client lost that effort at the trial level. Was that appealed?
That was appealed. We still have a case pending before the Circuit Court of Cook County in the Chancery Division.
That's in the Chancery Division. That's
correct.
All that's left in the
correct
court system.
And this is still pending. Basically, the jurisdictional statute specifically grants this court jurisdiction to hear constitutional claims. And this is what this case is all about. The denial of continuance.
But isn't our jurisdiction restricted under 1252A2C? Doesn't that take our jurisdiction away?
As a matter of fact, 1252A2D grants you jurisdiction.
C, I'm talking about C, though.
The C would strip jurisdiction of this court had it not been for the constitutional claim that is being brought and that is, in fact, reinstated.
So how is the continuance come up with a constitutional claim, denial of a continuance?
Your Honor.
You're talking about due process or something?
That's Sixth Amendment right to effective
assistance.
Well, that's
way back when you say he got ineffective assistance of counsel.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that's a long time ago. That they threw out because it was 9 years late and challenging.
Precisely. The petitioner was picked up by immigration and placed in removal proceedings 9 years after the fact, 9 years after that particular conviction. They had all this time to institute proceedings and try to remove him from the United States. They chose to wait that long.
Well, of course, the attorney told him that he was only going to get probation, and that's what he got. He didn't say, yeah, well, down the pike, this may be a problem. And that's you're calling that ineffective assistance of counsel, I guess.
Well, the Supreme Court in Padilla v. Kentucky, in fact, found that failure to advise of possible immigration consequences does amount to deficient performance by counsel. And this is exactly what has happened here. And in fact, at the criminal court, the petition was dismissed not on a substantive basis, not because the court did not believe Mr. Morales' claim that he was not advised. It was purely on the basis of the statute of limitation.
So the way you're going to overcome 1252A2C is by claiming way back ineffective assistance of counsel, so you've got a Sixth Amendment constitutional issue. Is that right?
That is correct.
Because otherwise, because of his criminal conviction, C would take him out of the picture.
That is absolutely correct.
We would not have jurisdiction.
Correct. And, Your Honor, it's very important to understand in a removal case that is based on the criminal conviction.
Don't his other convictions also make him removable?
They render him removable, but he would still be eligible to apply for discretionary relief from removal if you wish for an amnesty in front of an immigration judge by showing rehabilitation, family ties, long-term residence in the United States. This particular conviction is defined as aggravated felony under immigration law, and that's the only conviction that makes him ineligible to even request relief from removal and to apply for cancellation. This is why it was so crucially important to cure the wrong that was done to him in this particular case. And again, in removal cases that are based on criminal convictions, the removal and criminal case are very closely intertwined. In fact, the criminal conviction serves as the basis for removal, and it also regulates whether or not you can apply for relief. If that criminal conviction was entered unlawfully, by denying continuance that would allow you to cure that, to remedy that constitutional violation, the immigration court would, in fact, further the constitutional violation. In this case, we're dealing with someone who has entered the United States with an immigrant visa more than 24 years ago to reunite with his father. He was just 19 years at that time. He has resided in the country since then. Granted, he was not a model citizen. He's made a number of poor choices that resulted in a number of convictions. But even the most unlikable, the most unsympathetic defendant is still entitled to have his rights protected. And this is exactly what we're trying to accomplish in this case. We're asking the court to rule that by denying the continuance, the immigration judge, in fact, cut short or made it impossible for the petitioner to pursue his post-conviction relief. Any legal protection...
So how long should it be continued? The IJ continued it multiple times, I think five or six times.
Yes, in fact.
And allowed the state court to make its initial rule, a trial-level ruling. How long? So just indefinitely?
And most definitely not indefinitely, Your Honor. In this case, we can... I apologize. In this case, we have diligently pursued all available relief, and as long as it can be shown and proven that there is no...
This Chancery Court proceeding is not part of the criminal appeal or the statutory post-conviction relief. It's kind of an undefined...
Your Honor, it's very interesting. I understand this is... very untraditional and unorthodox, but in fact that was something that was suggested by the criminal court judge, who said, I have, I hear your arguments
about...
If
it's never been done before, how exactly. Long does the IJ have to wait for that process to play out?
Again, Your Honor, you need to understand that the immigration removal proceeding is considered civil. So detention is also a civil confinement, civil detention. My client has been locked up for more than 20 months. As of today, he would not have voluntarily subjected himself to incarceration, to being placed with state defendants, to being beaten in jail, if he did not sincerely believe that there was a constitutional wrong that was done to him that he wanted to see remedied.
And so I think he would have not pleaded guilty, you say, he would have gone to trial?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and then if convicted, then there's no constitutional issue, is there?
That is correct as well. And in this case, the facts, the underlying facts of the criminal case are such that the conviction resulted from his relationship with his then minor girlfriend. They are still together. In fact, when he was picked up, they were planning to get married, to buy business together, to build their life together. So whether or not the trial would have gone in his favor is still something that was to be determined by the finder of fact.
See, the children still together. Are they married?
No, they're not. In fact, she was the one who first came to me soon after he was picked up and has been very closely monitoring the case, visiting him in jail, and have expressed her desire to do whatever it takes to make sure that he stays here with her. Again, I just want to stress, I see my time is running out, but it's very important to understand that...
You can reserve it for rebuttal, you know.
Right, I will reserve the balance of my time. Thank you.
I thank you. Ms. Benner-Leon.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Wendy Benner-Leon, appearing on behalf of the United States Attorney General. It's respondent's position, Your Honors, that the court does not have jurisdiction over this because of the criminal alien jurisdictional bar at 1258 U.S.C. 1252 A2C, because he's removable for a firearm offense as well as an aggravated felony. You do retain jurisdiction to review constitutional claims and questions of law. However, petitioner's challenge of a denial of a continuance does not raise a constitutional issue or question of law.
Can I ask just a general question? Is your position that the Calma case, for example, is confined to 1252A2B and does not stretch over into 2C?
The Calma case actually is a case that discusses the difference between the A2B and C. And
you're satisfied that that difference would confine this case to C, given the criminal conviction?
Yes, it's an independent ground. It's an independent jurisdictional provision. It's independent. We're not arguing that the court doesn't have jurisdiction of discretionary decisions like denials of continuances under 1252A to B. We're arguing it's the independent, what I call criminal alien jurisdictional bar. He has both a firearm offense and aggravated felony, and 1252A2C says that no court shall review final orders of removal of criminal aliens who've been convicted of those offenses. And that includes the antecedent decisions, such as a denial of a continuance. You could review a denial of a continuance if there's something in the decision that raises a question of law or constitutional claim. He's arguing that the constitutional issue is the Sixth Amendment right to counsel in his criminal proceeding. He's not arguing he was denied any constitutional rights in his immigration proceedings. And this court in Mansouri and Ghani says that the court doesn't review in this venue when you're reviewing removal decisions, you don't review attacks to or collateral challenges to convictions that underlie the removal proceedings. Now, he does have several grounds of removal here, five grounds of removal based on four different convictions. There's no dispute that his convictions are final. And that's a key because it's final for immigration purposes. The court doesn't consider whether the court and the immigration judges actually don't review convictions to see if they have any constitutional infirmities when we're in immigration proceedings. So it's our argument that he's not raising a constitutional claim by arguing what happened in criminal court. What he does there is need to go to criminal court and make those arguments that he was deprived Sixth Amendment right, which he did. And the immigration judge in this case gave him an opportunity to, gave him several continuances to allow him to go to the criminal court. And the criminal court ultimately denied his post-conviction relief. And then he asked for continuance to wait the appeal and a separate petition that he filed in the Chancery Court. And at that point, the agency said, no, we won't grant any further continuances because, one, it's particularly speculative that you will, be granted, your post-conviction relief will be granted considering now you're at appeal and it's already been denied. So it's very speculative that the state courts would grant it. And furthermore, even assuming they did, agency pointed out that in this case, because of his lengthy criminal history, it would be very doubtful that he would even get relief ultimately anyway in the form of cancellation or removal. He hadn't made any prima facie showing that he would merit favorable exercise of discretion. You look at the good character of the person. Do they have ties? Did they serve in armed forces? Do they have ties to businesses or communities? Yes, he's lived here a long time. That would not overcome his huge criminal history, which include domestic battery with bodily injury, firearm offenses, aggravated sexual abuse against a minor, domestic violation of a protection order, plus...
With all of that, clearly, if you, just hypothetically, if you subtract out the aggravated felony of the underage, whatever the crime was, the one that in 2002, I believe, if you subtract that out, then no question there's plenty of reasons why he should be deported. But that gets it into a little bit different category. And what I'm trying to make sure is there is a line here between B and C.
There is a line. We are not arguing lack of jurisdiction.
I mean, without going to the merits, then, because we don't have jurisdiction if it is under C, and this idea of the only remote possibility of a constitutional issue of the Sixth Amendment has been resolved, it's been denied. So this is it. And so I think what I'm at least looking at is that we simply don't have jurisdiction.
Yes.
And that the Kalma case doesn't apply here. Now, is that your position, or is that something...
That the Kalma case does not apply?
It's defined, it seems to me it was involved with Section B.
Oh, yes, yes. That case, they had jurisdiction. There was not a criminal conviction under A2C that deprived it of jurisdiction. There's several cases, Hassan, where you had jurisdiction, and that was actually a decision where you held that there was no abuse of discretion for the board to deny a continuance so that the petitioner's wife wanted to appeal to the board the denial or the revocation of an I-130 visa petition. And they waited to see if that would be the I-130 be revoked, but once that was done, they wanted another continuance for an appeal of that decision, and this court found there was no abuse to continue. You know, once they get denied that relief, to hold it for an appeal, it's, you know, in order to overturn a denial of continuance, that's a very high standard because it has to be irrational. It has to be it's abuse of discretion standard. So there has to be like no explanation, or it departs from precedent, or it's made with invidious discrimination based on racial group or some factor.
We have none of that here.
None of that here. This is a very rational decision. I don't think you have jurisdiction to reach it, only because there's no question of law or constitutional claim. He doesn't claim he was deprived due process in his removal proceedings, and it's clear he was given due process because he had many chances, got continuances, and there's no dispute about his removability. Unless this court would have any further questions, I would ask that you dismiss a petition for lack of jurisdiction, or if you find there's jurisdiction, to deny it on the merits because the agency did not abuse.
I do have one quick question for you. You cite our Petrov case as part of your principal jurisdictional argument. Are you familiar with our ISAC case from 2010, ISSAQ versus Holder from 2010?
I might be able to refresh my memory, but I do not.
Well, it has some criticism of Petrov in it. I wondered whether you were familiar with that. If you're not, that's fine.
I do not believe I
that's
am.
Fine. That's fine.
Okay. So thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Counsel. You have 1 minute.
Your Honors, as a society, we've come to rely on the courts, to view the courts as guardians of individual rights and liberties. Therefore, any statute that attempts to strip the court of jurisdiction to review agency actions should be treated as suspect and narrowly interpreted. In this case, it is impossible to segregate the removal proceedings from the underlying criminal case because the decision made in one avenue, be it that is by the immigration judge, directly affects the right of a defendant in a criminal case. No right, no protected interest would be worth anything if there was no reasonable opportunity to enforce a violation of that right.
Is there ever some finality to that, though?
I apologize.
Some finality to this effort to, well, I guess, right the wrong that you claimed that, you know, 8 or 9, 10 years ago. That you can't just keep going into some other forum and thinking you should get a continuance, even when it's very remote or and no precedent for it.
I understand the court's concern.
You're trying to set a new precedent here, I think.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Your Honor, I understand the court's concern, yet as I have stressed, no person, no defendant would voluntarily subject themselves to indefinite incarceration.
So no one's ever going to plead guilty anymore, are they? Anybody that's, they aren't going to go to trial, because that's the only way to not know what's going to happen a long way down the pike you have to be acquitted, in other words. And by not by pleading guilty, he wasn't acquitted. Went to trial and got acquitted, then no problem.
That is exactly correct.
Of course, if he got convicted, we were in the same boat.
Yes, Your Honor, but at least he knew the consequences, mm-hmm. and he made a knowing decision to either go to trial or make a plea. In this case, he entered into an agreement that's very similar to any other contract without knowing the price he would have to pay eventually down the road. That's unjust. That's wrongful. That's unconstitutional.
It's a problem, but nevertheless, he did have a lot of time after, you know, just being on probation. And then
just like the government had all this time to institute removal proceedings, they waited for 9 years to do that. And now that was the first time that he first learned of the wrong that was done back to him back in 2002.
That's why he didn't start a long time ago, right?
Until then, he had no reason to doubt the attorney's advice.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. The case will be taken.